Hello, America. It's your new favourite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two fourths of the British podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.
This is The Bench. The Bench. On ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
John Granato out today, but that doesn't mean we got a lot going on, because we do. Filling in for John Granato is one Adam Wexler. Houston's unofficial mayor, Bun B, is going to join the show here in just moments. The surly Del Olale, of course, is here after his Miami Heat were involved in another fracas at the end of a game. Another blowout at the hands of the Sixers over layup gate. And the Houston Astros starting pitching is right now, this last five outings for the five-man rotation was maybe the most dominant stretch we've ever seen in Astros history for a 1-5 starting rotation. Daryl Morey joins the show at 7:15 to talk about the Rockets and the playoff game tomorrow night against the Minnesota Timberwolves. We've got Mike Mayock from the NFL Network, is the draft kingpin, in my estimation, is going to join the show at 7:30. So it's going to be tight. It's going to be tight. We got to keep our times good, Dale. We got to get out of breaks on time, which is kind of a staple of the show.
That's on you.
It's going to be very tight. We got a lot of great information, so I want you to keep it right here. You guys can call whenever you like, 713-780-3776. Might as well send Buns here, Dell, so send the Juggalo tray back out to get Bun downstairs as well, because that's going to be scary for Bun. If he sees him, he's going to be like, what? Like, that's probably what it feels like, Wex, when people just run up on him at any point at a, you know, out on the streets of Houston. Like, I love your work with UGK, but when Trey does it, it's
a little
scary. You
mean like if the Astros have a parade and he's walking around with Trey the Truth and people just go running at him and they say, hey, can we talk to you real quick for Channel 2?
But then Trey Trey the Redhead is there.
Yeah. I did that.
That's the guy that, there he is. He's a little different breed of cat.
Yeah. We didn't really hook up earlier.
Yeah, I don't know if he really knows what's going on right now.
It appeared that way when I got up by other means.
No.
Sure,
you did?
Sure.
How'd you get in?
Somebody else.
I sent him after you like 5 or 6 minutes ago. I said this about the Astros. I want to see if you agree. It stretches from the Rangers one game and then four games with the Mariners. The Astros won again yesterday, 9-2, Jose Altuve had four RBIs, a big double. He doubled in runs to kind of blast it open. Every single player had a hit in the lineup who started, except for one guy.
Who?
And there are two guys that are pretty much the default guesses right now, and they would be Derek Fisher and Jake Mariznick. Derek Fisher pinch hit. Jake Mariznick was 0-for-4, but everybody else had a hit. But I said, I believe that this might be the best run, and this is kind of I don't know how you would check this. It would take a lot of time to go check this for somebody, and this isn't going to be me doing this. But checking this for 1-5, I don't know that the Astros 1-5 rotation of starters has ever had a better consecutive 1-5 start. Maybe an Astros
like
history.
The first trip through the rotation, you immediately want to say, well, let's check the numbers for these guys for the first trip through. Every single trip through the rotation, other than one Lance McCullers blow-up, you've wanted to do it, and this last trip was no different.
Yeah.
Dallas Keuchel threw a complete game and lost.
Yeah, I know.
And Charlie Morton, 7 more shutout innings. Garrett Cole continues to be the best pitcher in the AL, unless it's Morton, or unless it's Verlander, or unless it's one of his other teammates.
But check out what they did this time. 37 innings pitched, 16 hits, 4 earned runs, 5 walks, and 41 strikeouts. 5 pitchers over the last 5 games. So that's every single starter got their lick in. The worst game you can find is Dallas Keuchel. 8 innings, 6 hits, 2 earned runs.
And that was the night nobody else had to pitch because he threw all 8 innings. Yeah. And a loss.
Yeah. That's the worst game that you can find, and that was a loss. The other loss was 8 innings, 1 hit, 1 run, well, and 11 strikeouts.
When you're facing Bartolo Colon, things are a little different.
The unhittable, you know? Bartolo Colon. Exactly. Bum B joins the show now. That does smell. What are we doing? Is it McDonald's?
McDonald's.
It smells good.
I was in a rush.
How you feeling, bud?
I'm awake.
I know. It's a struggle.
Yeah.
Bun once did the show at 7:90 with like the 6 a.m. show. And I was thinking, there just aren't many people who are willing to do the 6 a.m. show. I was like, that's pretty good dedication if you're willing to do a 6 a.m. show, Bun.
I think I like to hear myself talk at this point. That's pretty much all it takes to get me on the air now.
So we know that Adam and I were just talking about this, the starting rotation that the Astros have.
Right.
And
which I'm not mad at right now.
Not mad at them at all.
I'm not mad at it.
The last 5 games have been complete and total domination, but this is the thing. It's not like it's just a random 5 games. That starting lineup has been dominating pretty much the whole time. I mean, Lance McCullers had a hiccup. Dallas Keuchel had a hiccup. But other than that, it's pretty much been straight domination, and it's just a matter of can the bullpen hold up and can the hitters hit. And as long as your starting rotation is like that, you really shouldn't, and you've got Altuve, Correa, Bregman, Springer. Springer and Bregman haven't even really started hitting. They never do in April. This is why I can't really get this nervous about this team when they had a little stretch where they lost 5 or 6. Because as long as your starting pitching's good, your hitting's going to come around. And you've always got a trade deadline to go pick up arms. I mean, the Astros know they're only a legit closer and maybe one other arm away from, you know, from being able to lock up their weaknesses. That's why I have a hard time getting too nervous unless this turns into a Cubs situation where it just feels like they're,
you're looking World at that Series hangover, aren't you?
Yeah, but I don't think that's the case. But, you know, you never know. You could have that, I guess.
Nah, this team is going to be fine. I mean, we're very early. This is April. I don't start making decisions about a team in April or really players for that matter. They got a long time to get to where they need to get. The pitching's there. We see that. The bats are going to come around when they need to. This team's going to warm up. We're still very early in it, and there's no need to get nervous, people. Everybody calm down. We're still where we need to be, I think. You know, they haven't gotten too far away from themselves yet at any point, so there's no need for me to even get nervous. I'm excited about the season.
So you traded all these prospects to get Verlander. You traded even more prospects to get Cole. Mm-hmm. And guess what? When it comes to the deadline, like Bun said, you're going to have the prospects still to go get a closer if you need one or some other player for the back end of the bullpen. They're going to be able to do that, and they will again because they seem determined to make sure this wasn't a one-year parade. It was an extended period of domination.
And it should be. And it should be because
they can plug these holes. That's not
this isn't even I'm not even worried about plugging the holes because I'm not worried about, first of all, my belief is the bats are fine. You don't sweat the bats at all. It's just a slow start from guys who are perennial slow starters. I mean, George Springer hits 220 in April. That's his career. He's always done this. Alex Bregman has a more limited sample size, but he doesn't hit early. So you can't get worried about things that are consistently, you know, this is their career trend. It's not like George Springer isn't going to hit. So the Astros right now, the pitching staff is just brilliant right now. The arms, this is as dominant a rotation. They've never had this many talented arms in their rotation. It's funny because last year at this time, it was like, Keuchel's amazing, Lance McCullers is dealing, and then, McHugh, maybe when he's healthy, because I don't think he started off healthy.
He missed a big chunk of the year.
Yeah, Charlie Morton, Charlie Morton. I don't know.
That's what the opposing teams are saying now about Charlie Morton.
Yeah, now you don't want any part of Charlie Morton, and now it's like McCullers and Morton are 4-5, and they're better than some teams 1-2. So really great for them. We're going to break it early because coming up next is Daryl Morey is going to join the show here. I know, Bun, I've been seeing on your Instagram, you're at a lot of Rockets games. And I always see Wex in the background, too, just sitting in the media.
Lurking.
Like, look at Adam Wexler. They're lurking over there. in the media seat. So we're going to talk about Rockets and the playoff series against the Minnesota Timberwolves. And then Mike Mayock from NFL Network is going to join us at 7:30, talk a little NFL draft. Right now, I want to tell you about Renter's Warehouse. They are the guys who are going to make sure that your property gets rented out quickly. There's nothing worse than having a mortgage payment and you can't get someone else to pay it while you're getting ready to move into a house. That's the worst, is when you're going to sell your home and you want to buy a home and move, and then you got to perfectly time it so there's no, you're like, man, I guess I got to buy my home early, but then make it contingent upon when I sell my home. It's a mess. It's a pain. How about Renter's Warehouse? Buy your home whenever you want to, and then rent your home out. Let Renter's Warehouse get people in there on average within 17 days. They vet your renters. They will guarantee them for up to one full year. They help you set the price so that you get maximum dollars for your property. They market your property for you. I mean, they handle everything. And it's one low monthly price that you pay and you are taken care of in terms of getting your house ready to rent. They will get it ready to rent as well, collect the rent, and handle anything that happens with your property. Renter's Warehouse, 713-224-RENT, or go to renterswarehouse.com.
You can now listen to all your favorite shows on the Amazon Echo.
Oh, sweet, dude.
Just say, Alexa, open ESPN 97.5.
Now playing ESPN 97.5.
This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas. Here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Joe Morey expected a call here in just 1 second, and then Mike Mayock is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. With the Rockets, I said this. I don't know you guys' thoughts on this, but Lex, you watch a lot of Rockets all year long, covering them at Channel 2. Wins are wins. You take them. But these last two wins, this is an example of they wouldn't have won these games in the past. Like, if James had played as badly as he played in the last game, it would have been a real struggle to win. Now, it's not a great matchup for Minnesota.
Because they don't like to defend?
Well, apparently they don't like to defend, and Karl Anthony Towns is taking shots like Rip Hamilton, running off screens and sprinting to the corner and catch and shoot. It's like, wow, okay, if you want to do that, that's fine. But what I find interesting is that they still haven't gotten in their rhythm offensively.
They're toying with the Minnesota Timberwolves because they can. They're not playing their best basketball. They're missing wide open shots left and right, and that includes layups. Missed a ton of layups early in the game, or else they never would have trailed. Minnesota started off hot, started off aggressive, and then 5 minutes later, the game was over.
Yeah. I mean,
James made a shot in each half of a playoff game, and they coasted to victory. And they can against this team because of the way they're playing. Towns is way too passive. They're not forcing the ball into him and either encouraging him to pass out of that if the Rockets double, which they won't. People are finally starting to come around on the fact that Clint Capella doesn't need that, and their defense requires them to not do that. They switch out on the perimeter, and they let him handle the business down there. That's one of the huge reasons why their defense can elevate to being one of the top five in the league. And again, the rest of the league and the rest of the fans and nationally, they're just now starting to recognize that this team does defend. There's a reason why Minnesota is struggling so badly offensively in this series, and it's not just because they're nervous. It's because the Rockets are doing things right.
They're a good defensive team, and it's rare to see it happen go from below par to really good that quickly. But the guy that really turned the whole game around the other day was Gerald Green. But I know you know, I believe you know Gerald Green a little bit. His story to me is incredible. How does Daryl Morey even think about getting a Gerald Green? He's just doing nothing. You just think Gerald Green's just out of basketball, and that's that. I never envisioned him being the big piece off the bench that would spark them in the middle of the season and then spark them in game two. Like, it's kind of a crazy success story where he goes from I remember like, oh, there's Gerald Green. He's on Instagram trying to shout out people to help with hurricane relief and stuff like that. Like, oh, okay. I didn't know what he was doing with his, you know, with his career now, what his life. That's really cool that Gerald Green's involved in that. And then before you know it, he's got a sweet Rockets logo braided up in his hair, and he's just bombing people out with threes. I'm like, I didn't see this coming.
This is one of those stories where you see a kid's dream literally come true. Not just a dream of playing in the NBA, but, you know, playing for the home team. You know, it's a whole different level of I think, adamancy for him. Like, to really, to not only be back in the game, which he really wanted to be back in the game, but to be back playing in a city like Houston where he grew up in. You know, he's been waiting to put that R braid in his head for years. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Just being real. And he does bring, I think, a different level of urgency when he's on the floor. You know, he can drive to the lane. He can shoot from the outside. He can defend. He can do everything. And I don't want to start patting him on the back before he calls in, but this just kind of goes back to what I like to think is the brilliance of Daryl Morey. Like, to see a kid who not only has the talent, but also has the hunger, right, and wants to come and play for this team. And I think this is just the beginning of Gerald's, like, comeback in the NBA.
You don't think this is just a quick hit, one-and-done situation?
I don't think so. I think he's the perfect guy to have on the bench to elevate the game. In those moments where someone kind of needs to come in and turn things around. Because every time he hits the floor, he's going to play strong. You know, it's not just going to be, hey, Gerald, we need you to, you know, take a couple from the perimeter and whatnot. No, they're going to let him come in. The team kind of plays to his talents. The momentum of the team really plays to his talents. And he really, really wants to be a Houston Rocket, probably more than anybody I've seen in a long time.
He's had so many of these games like the one he had the other night. Like Bun's saying, he's having the time of his life.
Absolutely.
But the best part about it to me is that his teammates know it. You know, I was talking to Eric Gordon after the game last night or two nights ago, and I asked him, you know, how does Gerald do it? And the smile that comes on Eric's face because of what he's seen is what makes it so cool for the way this team chemistry works. He's like, he's a wild card. He's just that spark plug, and you know what you're going to get from him. And what you were saying, Bun, about, you know, whether he's getting that quick shot from the perimeter. This is a guy basically off his couch, and he can get a shot off anytime he wants in an NBA game, in the playoffs, at the highest level. He has skills. He has talents, and they do happen to match very well with what this team wants their guys to do. The green light is no brighter than anywhere else in the NBA than when you're playing in Mike D'Antoni's offense, when James Harden's running it, when Chris Paul's running it, and Green is such a brilliant fit for that, for what they do. He's taking nothing but either wide-open shots or shots that are just tailor-made for what this offense wants to do. And he, by the way, in this series, he's been a tremendous rebounder. Huge for this team, where they're going to be undersized because they basically play one big. And he's been a huge effort in that regard, keeping Minnesota from getting extra shots or helping the Rockets start running out.
You know, and this is the thing with Gerald Green. He's actually in a perfect spot. You're right. He is in a perfect spot, Bun. And it's also a perfect time because when you get into a league, when you're young, you're running around, you're thinking you're this and you're that, and you're not the most humble guy, because all of us are like that.
I was like that yesterday.
Full of piss and vinegar. Yeah. And then you got humbled last night. I can tell by your voice how tired you are right now. But, you get humbled real quick by a night out.
Yeah, sit middle on Southwest Wool. It'll do it for you.
So, sitting middle on Southwest. Well, I want to talk about what you were doing. That was really cool. I saw on Instagram, I was like, look at Bun out here. And then I know what you're doing next, which is going to be a nice difference. What's really cool is that Gerald is on the back end of his career. So you can be more introspective. You can see where your career has been. You are more humbled, but at the same time, you're just smarter. You're wiser. You're more likely to find a great fit late because people know who you are. You know who you are. And Daryl Morey's got a guy who, frankly, is going to he's going to be able to come in, and if he's not shooting well, then, you know, if he's not shooting well, then he doesn't have to stand for a long time. If he's red hot, then you just roll with him. It's like you keep the dice in your hand. He's like the hot guy at the craps table. If Gerald's rolling points, then you just let Gerald keep rolling points, and you get on that pass line, and you get odds behind it,
yeah,
and you keep collecting. If he's not rolling well, the dice pass to the next guy. But he can do that here. It's not like he's in a situation where early in his career he's counted on to live up to a draft stock and score this many points. He's got one job.
I think that's the big difference for him in terms of playing with the Rockets is, I think it's the same thing when you look at Chris Paul. Everybody knows this is James's team, right? So all they have to do is go in, and all they're expected to do is play their role. You know, play their role on that team, do what it is that they're being asked to do, and then sit back and relax. He doesn't have all that pressure on him, and he's older now than he was when he first came in. So he understands the dynamics of the game and role playing, and he's, he's proud to be back on the court. He's proud to be back in Houston, and he's like, look, whatever you guys need me to do, I'm going to do it at a high level.
Yeah.
You know, if you need me to – you know, if you need me to get rebounds, I'll do that on a high level.
Which he did the other day. I mean, it was incredible.
He gets it, and he does what he does, and he goes home, and he's very happy, and he's very content with getting his chance to be back on the court. And I think he's going to handle this a whole lot better than he maybe had in the past.
Yeah, which is not unusual for guys in their career to do that later on in their career. They turn into different players when they know themselves better. I guess probably everybody does. You're more honest with yourself.
And it doesn't take being shifted to the G League to come to that, you know, to that understanding for Gerald. You know, a lot of guys don't really get it until they're taken really out of the game and out of the system and kind of have to start back, not really from scratch, but kind of reassert themselves and reintroduce themselves to teams and players, because everybody has a preconceived notion about some of these guys sometimes. I know people thought Gerald's attitude and, not really being – serious and concentrating on things and getting frustrated very easily was going to be something that would keep him out. But his humility kicked in, and Daryl saw it. Daryl pulled him in, and he's going to take full advantage of this opportunity. I can tell you that. Personally.
No doubt.
He's going to, as far as it takes him. And I feel like even if the Rockets don't pick him up, he's going to be on some next year. He'll be on somebody else's team.
He's put good tape out there.
Yeah, no, he's auditioning well right now.
Morey, he called late. We got Mike Mayock coming up in about 6 minutes. Is he going to be able to call at about 45? Okay. We'll see what happens. We'll talk to Dell. We'll get the lowdown on that. Daryl was just calling. He called a little bit late, so we're going to try to get him on. Because to me, this is easily the best team he's built, the most balanced. It's the finest built team, and I never saw that happen. And after last year, I'm like, I don't know where he goes with this now. I don't know what you do with
but
this.
But he always does. I mean, it doesn't always work out how he wants, but he presents a platform each offseason that allows for flexibility. Every year he puts the team together. He knows there's going to be multiple different options on how they're going to build. They didn't go into this offseason yet. We'll get Chris Paul, and we'll fill in the pieces.
Do you know how hard it is not to get trapped?
He put the team in position to be able to be open to the opportunities that come up, like Chris Paul wanting to get out of L.A., wanting to work his own contract in a manner that would get him to Houston. Yes, they needed to orchestrate a trade, but that's like what you're about to say. How does he always have the assets?
Because
he purposely does that, so every offseason, up until now, this offseason, this upcoming offseason might be a little different because you might be coming off a little bit different season. But every offseason prior to this year, they still needed to get better, and he knew it. He was trying to find the pieces to fit around the obvious superstar, who they also acquired in that manner. It could have been Chris Bosh. It could have been Carmelo Anthony. It could have been Pau Gasol. Now it turns out that it's Chris Paul, who obviously is the best of the bunch. But he was always in position to have an opportunity to land those guys.
Let's break it right here. When we come back, Mike Mayock from the NFL Network is going to join us. It's hard to get a hold of him these days, but he is going to spend some time with us, and we'll talk about some of the guys in the NFL draft coming up next, and then we'll try to catch back up with Daryl Morey. I want to tell you about Men's Tee Clinic. Right down the street is where I went yesterday, 7801 Durham. And I'm sorry, 1801 Durham. It's Durham and I-10 is the location I go to for Men's Tee Clinic. It is, so I just started getting my workouts back. I'm out of the boot. I'm like finally out of just doing all my draft stuff. And so I've been able to lose about 7-8 pounds here in the last, 3 weeks. And it's going to just keep going down, down, down. And what happens is with Men's Tee Clinic, when your testosterone level is right, the workouts are it's like having a cheat code. Your workout level really accelerates, the benefits accelerate. And that's kind of like when you were 20 and 30. You think back, oh, I remember when I used to be able to eat this and do this at night. I had all this energy and I didn't have the belly fat that I had before. My workouts matter more. That could be a sign of lower testosterone. It happens naturally in one out of every three men who approach or are over the age of 40. But you can do something about it by going to Men's Tee Clinic. They test you. They find out where your levels are. They can give you treatments and get your levels back to where they should be. And you get all the same benefits that you had in your 20s and 30s. And it is a huge, huge benefit for you in terms of your quality of life, energy level, workout level, just your overall drive. That funk is lifted from where you were previously, and it's made a big difference over the last 2.5 years for me. Go to MensTeaClinic.com for all 4 locations and tell them you heard about it right here on The Bench from Lance Erline.
To get the latest and best content on where to go, what to do, where to eat, and where to drink, go to culturemap.com. This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's John Granato and Lance Erline.
Actually, Lance Erline, Adam Wexler, and Bun B with you today. And we've been talking some Rockets basketball. We hit on Astros. Now it's time to do what my other gig is, the NFL draft. And joining the show right now is one of my favorite guys. He's been one of my favorite guys for a long time. The draft fan's true draft voice, and that would be Mike Mayock from the NFL Network. Mike, man, thanks. First of all, I'm doing about 2 to 3 shows a day over the last 2 weeks, and I'm turning down about that many requests, so I can only imagine how it's going for you, and I know you got to prepare for your full week over there in Dallas, so I appreciate you taking time out to join the show and talk to us. I want to get right into this. Everybody, the first question you're always asking all the shows is the quarterbacks. It's the first question we're always asked about these quarterbacks. I think that this is a highly unusual class in that I see 5 guys who could be potentially really good, but I think 4 of them have a little lower floors than you would also like. And the one guy I exclude personally, Mike, is Darnold, who I think is probably the safest in my estimation out of this group. How do you see the ceiling floor variance? Because I didn't think Goff and Wentz's floors were as low as what some of these guys could potentially be.
You know, I agree with almost everything you said right there, and I mean, to establish a basis, I would say that the 2 easiest quarterback evaluations I've personally had in the last 7, 8, 10 years are Andrew Luck and Carson Wentz. Mm-hmm. And my dad, who was my high school football coach, asked me before the Wentz draft, "I've never seen you bang a table so hard for a kid. Why Carson Wentz?" And I said, "Dad, on top of all the physical stuff, arm talent, size, athletic ability, feet, accuracy. Aside from all that, when you walk away from the kid, you feel like you just walked away from Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Russell Wilson, etc. And I don't feel that with any of the quarterbacks this year. I'm with you on Darnold. He's my number one guy. There's still some concerns about ball security with him.
20 games and 20 interceptions in the last 20. That's a problem.
And it's not just interceptions. It's
fumbles, yeah.
He's had a fumble history since high school. And I think you can tighten that up. And I think he beats you both inside and outside the pocket, which is why I like the kid. But it's a buyer beware market. And, you know, 5 of these guys are going to probably go in the first round. And, if history is accurate, we'll probably get 2 good quarterbacks out of the 5.
One guy that I was going to get to, Baker. I will get to Baker now. Let me hit you the Baker stuff right now. All this stuff lately, here's Ryan Leaf. Boy, I close my eyes and I listen to Baker talk and I feel like I'm hearing myself. Baker's like, I'm only looking at some of the playbooks. I don't care about other ones. And maybe that was a bit too honest when he said that out loud.
Yeah.
There were some issues with Senior Bowl, some concerns about whether or not when Baker left at halftime, was it for legitimate reasons? There's all kinds of stuff out there. Since the process of the draft began in really December, has your opinion on Baker Mayfield changed, irrespective of what you see on tape?
Yeah, it's an interesting conversation, and here's where I am, Lance. And I try to be really fair to the kids, you know, and I don't want to paint him with the Johnny Manziel brush. However, I made a mistake on Johnny Manziel, and I talked myself into, I liked his tape, and he likes to have a couple of beers, and that's okay. And I like to have a few beers in college. And I had no idea how bad this kid was. Mm-hmm. And when you're talking about what pisses me off about what I did there that goes against who I am, especially at the quarterback position.
Yeah.
And I told myself, I'm not doing it again. So this kid comes out, and I kind of like his tape, even though I think he throws to wide open windows in that conference and what they do. He's got so I like his tape. I like his energy and his leadership, but I get very worried about the kid off the field and how he presents himself. And at the end of the day, if you're a GM, it's about eliminating people at each position to get down to who you really like. And I would probably personally, even though I like the kid and I like his talent, I would probably eliminate him from my considerations just because of those concerns.
Mike, don't you think it's kind of inevitable that as you just talked your way through that entire process, there's 32 other rooms that are doing that exact thing. Don't you think it's almost a gimme, a guarantee that there are multiple rooms that just did the exact same thing over the last 5 weeks, 6 weeks, 6 months with Mayfield?
I think what's happening with Mayfield is he cuts both ways. And I think there are multiple rooms that have eliminated him. And I think there are multiple rooms that are saying, hey, that's just some immaturity. We put him up on the board. We like him. We've had him in our building. We like who he is and what he does. And by the way, when he's on the field, boy, is he energizing and a leader. So, you know, I really do believe there's polarity involved with this kid.
So at this point, do you think the biggest detriment to him being drafted is him?
You say that about all of them, I think.
Well, it used to be the 6 foot, like, well, he's 6 foot, he comes from a scheme, a system. I feel like that's, I kind of get what you're saying, Bun. I'm not sure that, Mike, that's, I don't know, maybe behind closed doors, that's still a big, big issue with teams. I don't know, maybe that is still a problem.
What are you talking? I'm sorry. You're talking about the character or the football?
No, I'm talking about.
I think the character. For
yeah,
me.
The character, obviously. But it used to be we go into this draft and you say, well, he's 6 foot tall, and he comes from a spread offense. That used to be the knock. Is that even really a huge concern with Baker these days?
I don't think it is. I think there's enough, you know, with Russell Wilson and Drew Brees and opportunity to say, because NFL executives like to point out comparables. He's not 5'9 or 5'10. You know, he's just under 6'1. And I've talked to an awful lot of teams, and I'm talking about GMs and head coaches, and I don't think that's the issue. I don't think the height is an issue. I think it really comes down to whether or not he appeals to you as being, quote, the face of your franchise and the leader in your locker room.
So, we're visiting with Mike Mayock right now. So when you get to Lamar Jackson, I feel like Lamar might have a better chance to succeed on the next level potentially than Josh Allen. And here's why. And this is kind of this thinking. You have to buy into this brand of thinking. Lamar Jackson is going to have teams who target him who have a plan. You're not going to just go in willy-nilly and say, we're just going to take Lamar Jackson and figure things out, or we'll just put him in our offense. When you draft, the team that drafts Lamar Jackson will have a very specific plan for him, a very specific offense in mind, and they are going to bend what they do to Lamar Jackson's strengths. Bill O'Brien did it with Deshaun Watson by adding some elements of the college football. The RPO stuff was added to Nick Foles. And so I think Lamar Jackson will have somebody draft him with a very specific plan. Josh Allen can go just about anywhere because he has transcendent physical talents. So I almost feel like, Mike, in a way, whoever takes Lamar Jackson will have thought this out and will have a plan that might make the most sense for him. Does that make sense to you?
Look, you're talking to maybe the biggest Lamar Jackson proponent in the country. I really like what he presents to opposing defenses, and I'm with you on the Bill O'Brien example. Bill did a great job with Deshaun Watson, allowing him to play fast and free. And he did it with a in-season adjustment. I mean, they went from Savage to Watson overnight and changed what they did philosophically and schematically. And they went from one of the worst offenses in the league to the most exciting and one of the best offenses in football. And Bill O'Brien allowed him to play like a college quarterback.
I'm sorry, and then, Mike, and then worst again when he got hurt. It was worst again when he got hurt.
Well, I mean, when do you see numbers like, look, they averaged 13 points without him and 34.7 with him? Are you kidding me? I mean, so I'm with you, Lance, on the whole, okay, NFL teams are doing a little better job now understanding what we're getting from college. Lamar is the next level of that. Now, he's not as far as Deshaun Watson in the pass game, but he's a better running quarterback. I've talked to, I can't tell you how many defense coordinators in the last 6 weeks on all the pro day tour I do and everything. Every time I bring up Lamar Jackson's name to defensive coordinators, the response is the same. It's, I hope he doesn't get drafted in my division because I don't want to have to deal with that twice a year. So the minute you introduce planned quarterback run into an offensive scheme, defensive coordinators have to change their entire game plan. So I'm not trying to say he's ready to revolutionize football today. But, Lance, I agree with you. There's going to be a plan in place. If you draft him, there's got to be a plan. And I'm not sure he's ready to play today, but I think some of these teams that have aging quarterbacks that are drafting from 20 to 32, he's got to be uppermost in their mind.
He'll be a Patriot. Watch. And people won't see it coming. They'll say, wait, but the Tom Brady offense. Yeah. Bill Belichick just got his ass kicked by Philadelphia's RPO and Nick Foles. You don't think he thought, boy, I could do that with Lamar Jackson and really crush people. So that's my guess is they'll sneak it in there on you.
Well, Mike, as you got into some of the text and stuff, everybody here knows that they're not going to be drafting, barring some deal, until the third round, but they do have three picks there. Are there a couple of names, certainly on the offensive line, probably tackle and or a cornerback that should fall in that 60 to 100 range, where you think the Texans really should be thinking long and hard about taking a player there, a name or two, that could actually impact next year's team?
Yeah. Obviously, they signed Senio Calamete, which I thought was an excellent signing, and I think he played over 60% of the snaps at a couple different positions in New Orleans. They signed Fulton. They signed Henderson, and they needed to do that. So, obviously, that's patchwork, but I thought it was a great job by Brian Gain and Bill O'Brien just to kind of stabilize that thing. And big picture, you know, the bottom line is you've got to take care of Deshaun Watson. Now, Julian Davenport is a developmental left tackle. Do I want to trust him today? You know, with Deshaun Watson, I'm not sure. And this is not a great tackle class, especially up high. But as you get down into the third round, plus or minus, a couple names that I think are of interest. A guy that's been rising is Jerron Christian from Louisville. And at Louisville, they play the old tight and split scheme, which means that he has to put his hand on the dirt on the left side and the right side, which I think is an added advantage. He's young, long arms, athletic, good feet. He's got some significant upside, as does a guy named Joe Noteboom from TCU. I think they're both third-round tackles with upside. I like both of those guys. And if you're talking about the corner class, which I think you have to, Jonathan Joseph is 34. They added Colvin and Batamolfi, but, you know, they've got to get a little younger in corner. I like the third-round corners. Mm-hmm. Like Holton Hill has some character issues from Texas. He's a long corner that tackles and can play. Like him a lot. Duke Dawson, Florida, MJ Stewart. I think they're really solid corners that probably project inside but could compete outside if you need them. So you start getting into the third round, and I'm bringing up those corners especially because I think they're tough, hard-nosed, solid football players that can also play special teams, and you've got to keep all those factors in mind.
And, you know, the Texans have three-thirds, so they do have the draft capital to jump into the second round, especially having an early third. They have the draft capital to move into the second round and go get – because I think Noteboom could – I think he could be gone, frankly, late in the second. And I think that might be a guy worth moving up for. And he's a classic example of, on tape, I thought he was one thing. At Senior Bowl, I was like, ooh, that's better than the tape. And at Combine, it's like, ooh, he's got all the measurables. He moves great. And I think he's really helped himself along the way.
Oh, he has, but it's a buyer beware situation.
Oh, yeah.
You go back to the TCU tape, and he runs really hot and cold.
Yeah.
And so you're kind of going, how high do I have to buy that inconsistency? Do I want to buy that in the second round? I don't want to give up draft capital to go get Noteboom in the second round. I'd much rather hang in the
Just
third
wait.
Round.
You know, and I like the third round this year. I like having three third round picks, unless there's somebody in that second round that you bang the table for and say that's got to be a Houston Texan. I'd rather have all three of those third round picks and kind of spread it around, because I think it's a solid third round. Especially, I mean, you want to talk about interior offensive linemen. You know, you can. I mean, Lance, you're the O-line king, man. I mean, there's some really good interior offensive linemen in this draft.
Teams,
they're going to get down in the third and fourth round.
Teams love the interior linemen, don't like the tackles. So it's a bad year to need tackles. It's a good year to need a center or a guard, and there really are. And, you know, Mike, there's so many now tackles who bump to guard. All it's doing is making the guard class even better, because now 6'5" is becoming a guard size instead of a tackle size. So it's really – yeah, I would agree with you. I think it's a – and I like – Will. You and I both like Will Richardson from NC State. That's another guy I think the Texans could consider who might be able to step in quickly and play right tack or could bump into guard. So that's
– he's got major character
issues, yeah.
And you could probably get him in the fifth or sixth round. He does have starting right tackle capabilities. I mean, the other guy, Lance, who I really like, and I'm afraid he's going to go in the second round now, is Austin Corbett from Nevada.
Oh,
left tackle. Exactly what you're talking about. Left tackle, kicking inside. He's going to be every bit as good, if not better, than Joel Bitonio, who did that from Nevada a few years ago. I love Corbett. He's got a little edge to him. He's smart. He's got a ton of upside. High school wrestler, the whole thing.
Let me tell you, there's no prairies in the third. He's a second all day, and there are teams who are talking about whether or not they should move inside the top 35, 36 picks for him. So he'll be, I think he's got a chance to be that one shocker pick at the end of the first round that gets in there. That's how hot his name is getting right now. So it's going to be really interesting to see on him as well. Mike, listen, I know you're super busy. We really appreciate you taking time to join us here on the bench in Houston. And if anybody wants to watch Mike Mayock's coverage and the NFL Network's coverage, of course, Path to the Draft and all the shows throughout the week are going to be fantastic. But then they're also partnering with Fox, so it's going to be a big bang-up show on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. You can catch all the draft coverage on the NFL Network. Mike, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it. Also, follow Mike on Twitter, at Mike Mayock.
Thanks, fellas.
All right, appreciate it. When we come back, get back to Rockets Talk, try to get Daryl Morey on the show. And if not, I want to talk about James Harden, the guy and the player, because we all have banged on him pretty hard about Elimination James and what he's done in some of the playoff series. But he's going to be the MVP this year. And there's a reason that players keep coming to Houston and wanting to play in Houston. And Daryl might do a sales job, but there's another guy who's acting as the real estate agent saying, this is a beautiful home. I think you'll love this sitting area right here. And that is James Harden's trying to get his 3% commission. We'll do that when we come back. 747 on the bench.
ESPN 97.5.
Starting to get by and traffic's heavy from Little York. Every home is unique. That's why Orkin relies on the latest science to get rid of pests. Visit Orkin.com today. Orkin, pest control down to a science. From the ESPN 97.5 Traffic Center, I'm Tiffany Terrell.
This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas. Here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
750, that's who Rodrigo, that's who Rodrigo, what was his nickname?
Blanco.
Blanco, yeah, that's who Blanco. Blanco was standing next to Quavo on the sideline. The kicker from Georgia just dropped a new rap album. Does that
really
bother you?
Not an album.
Well, he just, his single.
He's a SoundCloud rapper.
His hot single.
Single.
Okay, he is a SoundCloud rapper. That's true.
They're all SoundCloud rappers at this point. That's true. I got a SoundCloud account. You just,
yeah, but you're just not a SoundCloud. He's got a specific thought in mind about SoundCloud rapper. Like, it used to be, hey, check this out. Check this on my mixtape. Or here's my single. Yeah. You know, you're coming trying to get people out of the club. Now it's just, here's my SoundCloud page. Makes it easier for marketing. Here's my podcast. We get that.
Now you don't have to steal Vinny Chase's car and leave your CD in there. Hope Saigon gets discovered. right?
Saigon gets the sky. I forgot about that. Here he is right here. Kicker from Georgia. Listen to this, bud.
Do I have to?
Let's go. There ain't no promise of tomorrow.
Nope. Nope. You can stop right there.
This is more than just a game.
See, oh, see, now Dell wants you to just give it.
Attack the day. Yeah, I do this for my team. Free Meek Mill, we chase our dream.
It got, it gets
the Georgia kicker throws in Free Meek Mill.
We hit him with it again so Bunk can hear it.
So does the mayor of Philadelphia. That's me and I'm buying his album.
I want for me and my team. We know this is more than just a game.
No. Watch how quick the Free Meek Mill is.
So ATD attack the day. Yeah, I do this for my team. Free Meek Mill, we chase our dreams. All I
just
a
Free Meek Mill just for instant credibility.
Sound like Free Meek Mill. I don't know.
Free oatmeal, continental breakfast deal. Got them honey buns. I'm coming up.
I just all I can say is you don't see me running on your field trying to kick your pigskin. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, that's what I want to ask you.
That's all I'm saying.
When you have, and it says, in this article I read, like, Georgia has three rappers on the team, three guys who have dropped, and I'm like, just, I like how everyone thinks, that's like, does everyone think they're a chef? Does everyone think they are? You know what? I'm also a doctor on because I got WebMD. Just everyone thinks they can be a rapper. Yeah. Everyone. Does that bother you at all?
It has bothered me for a long time. This is not a new. This is
new at all.
But it's just the proliferation of people who think they can rap right now. It's really crazy. But I mean, the industry doesn't really move towards talent anymore. It's not really about. And when I say talent, having a high aptitude for lyricism, vocabulary, and wordplay. That's not really what it takes to be defined as a great rapper in 2018. It's about how you dress. It's about your personality, your character. People aren't really selling music anymore. They're still a lifestyle.
I would disagree with the industry not going to talent. Because when I have Bad Bobby, or Bad Bob, whatever you pronounce it. What do you mean it doesn't gravitate towards talent? Listen to her.
This is the cash me outside
girl. I'm personally offended right now. That you even...
That's the kind of troll he is, though, Bun. We deal with this on a regular basis. He's hitting you with Bad Bobby just because he's that guy.
And I can't get those 30 seconds back, ever. No. So thank you. You realize she was just nominated for a Billboard Award?
For what?
No, she's got 80 million views for that video. 80 million people plus, or almost 90 million people or views for that video.
Same
hooks. 80 million disillusioned young people in this country.
It's what makes you scared, Bun.
Or it's probably just 10 kids who viewed it.
Clicked over and over again. Yeah, but yeah. 90, almost 90 million views for that video.
That doesn't surprise me. It's a train wreck. People are attracted to that kind of thing.
Wow.
And she's running around with this 9-year-old kid that's smoking.
Oh, no, she's almost fighting the 9-year-old.
No. Oh, yeah.
The other kid. I'm just very
Vicky.
Confused.
You're getting them all. Yeah, Whoa Vicky.
I should be getting them confused. I should not have a clear idea of who these people are.
Yeah, you're talking about Lil Tay, who started pushing bricks, quote unquote, pushing bricks when she was tired of being broke. Assume she started.
That what that's about?
Oh, Dell, he didn't know that Lil Tay was pushing bricks when she was about 8.
Yeah, she was broke when she was 6.
Yeah.
Started pushing bricks at 8, and now she's living that life.
Word.
Yep. At 9.
Word.
Yeah, that's the story she's telling everybody.
See, and this is the kind of thing that I worry about because I have grandkids now. And like when I was growing up, and I don't want to sound old, but when I was growing up, it was like you'd look at people and be like, man, I can't wait to be that when I grow up.
Mm-hmm.
But kids nowadays are like, well, she's 15. She's got a record deal. I want to rap now, you know? I'm just disillusioned by
pushing bricks at 8, and then at 9, now she's on YouTube throwing a cupcake in her dad's face as part of some troll job. So she's improved herself.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm a big fan of corporal punishment, and I just don't think people are beating their children enough.
Lil Tay is what the streets are calling her these days. Lil Tay.
I never thought I'd have that conversation.
She had a handful
of... I owe you for that.
Yeah. No, he does this every
worry.
Day.
If you're here until 9:30, you'll get a little bit more. Don't worry.
Okay, academics.
7:57 here on the bench. We come back. We'll get to more with Bun, with Adam Wexler. Your Astros starting pitchers are ruining people's lives right now, and there's nothing that the other squads can do about it. It's 7:58. Keep it right here. If you guys want to jump in and talk to Wex or Bun, 713-780-3776. No matter what you
what you do. When I'm alone, I'd rather be with you. Got these other feelings, I'll be right by your side till 2005.
Okay,
hold up, wait.
ESPN 97.5.
I assumed you knew.
Hello, America. It's your new favorite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two forts of the British podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.